Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion. This is my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. You know, we film this show, although it's available worldwide via YouTube, we film this show in the lovely small community of Pahrump, Nevada. And consequently, because Pahrump is so small, it's not unusual to meet people who, if you're doing a network show, if you're some big network guy, the odds that you're going to meet somebody who watches the show is probably pretty slim, right? But here in Pahrump, it's pretty common to meet people. People all the time, hey, you're Dave Champion, you're Bill Carnes. But I ran into a wonderful gal at the show, at the gym, who watches the show. You want to go ahead and put that up for us, Noah? This is Renee. Renee, I believe, is 87 or 88 years old. She is absolutely awesome. She's in the gym multiple times a week. She takes multiple classes, sometimes two a day, and she is as spry and adept. You know, at 87, whatever age she actually is, right in the ballpark of 87, she is more mentally astute. A lot of people I meet at 25.
You two look good together.
Yeah, she's awesome. And super friendly gal, and she watches the show. So
Hello?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, acknowledge her and tell you she loves the show.
If I ever got my fat ass into the gym, maybe I'd meet her too.
And that is Fit for 10. I've talked well about that because we want to acknowledge people who do a good job in town, and Fit for 10 does
our
that.
Our town's not so small. It's almost 40,000 people.
Are we sneaking up there again?
Yeah.
I know in 2008 we were almost there.
Yeah.
And then the economy tanked and people fled to the big urban centers where there's more money. So I didn't know we were on our way back up.
Yeah, when you say more money, I think easier availability of welfare on a lot of...
Is that what that is? Yeah. So, what are we going to do in our first segment?
You know, it's funny. When we started this show, Dave, we talked about wanting to do news, entertainment, things that are going on now, historical stuff. And I think it would be appropriate today to talk. There was something last week that was news that we covered in our first segment, which has now evolved into entertainment.
And that is?
That is Kim Davis. out of, what is it, Rowan County, Kentucky?
Rowan County, Kentucky.
And it's moved from news to entertainment where, we did the show on Wednesday, recorded that next morning, Thursday, before our show played here at 6 o'clock on Thursday evenings. She had been the federal judge had locked her up because she said she's not going to comply with his order.
Right, I think an element that a lot of people are missing in this, and we do need to catch up on the timeline, but I just want to throw this in there. a lot of people felt that she was thrown in the hoosegow by Judge Bunning because she would not issue a license for a same-sex couple. That is not what she got thrown in the hoosegow for. That's just one of those things that people look at things on a very superficial level.
One led to another.
Yes. What she was really put in the hoosegow for is Judge Bunning asked her, if I allow you to go back to your office, will you allow your deputy clerks to issue licenses to same-sex couples, or will you interfere with that? And she said, I will not permit them to do that. So closing the entire office down to meeting the constitutionally protected rights of a particular minority was what got her thrown in the hoosegow.
Right.
People have that all wrong. All right. So,
imagine.
Yeah.
So she was released, I think this morning.
Yesterday.
Tuesday of this week. And, her attorney came out and said the marriage licenses to same-sex couples that have been issued in Kim's absence are not legally valid.
Oh, yeah. And these attorneys need to be sanctioned, okay? And I say that rarely because I understand that attorneys, it's their job to create an argument to further the interests of the person who's paying them. I get this. However, in this case, first of all, no one's paying them, okay? They're doing this pro bono. They're a 501c3 legal corporation. With a long history. And they have some wins on some things I look at, because I went to their website, of course, and looked. They've got some wins on some things I look at and go, right, deserve to win, right? They were in the right, the defendant was in the wrong, and they won. Hey, good job. This isn't one of them. And to me, this was an absolute certainty, 100%. That Kim Davis was going to end up exactly where she ended up from the beginning doing this. And it seems to me her attorneys have been, I don't know whether they're trying to gain a reputation for themselves. If so, they gain a reputation for themselves in my mind, and I'm sure the Lions being a bunch of boneheads. But I don't know whether
like
they're trying to push her
no
along.
No media is bad media. No coverage is bad coverage. And I think they're getting this. I would agree that these guys are moronic. Now, the Christian right, especially down in the southern Christian areas, are so into this, well, God says we can't do this, so I don't care what the law or what the Supreme Court says. What's the word I can use that doesn't get us bleeped? Some jackass decided to say that the Supreme Court's decision was unconstitutional. That they are provided in the Constitution the legislative branch passes laws, executive branch enforces laws, judicial branch interprets the laws and rights. When you are exercising a right that infringes on someone else's right, it's no longer right. You can't do that. There are protections for people. And I got to tell you, it is all stemmed from what two people do in the privacy of their own bedroom. And this has turned into such a big national stage issue. I mean, they're looking at grade school children being able to have transgendered bathrooms and shower facilities and such as that. And the whole thing has really been blown really so far on a whack. It's now, to me, becoming entertainment. It's like, how ridiculous can we take this from one far step to the other?
Yeah, there's two things I want to talk about. First of all, is this perspective about two people in their own bedroom. Then I want to talk about that kids transgender thing. This entire issue is, can I think, be crystallized by the views of Judge Roy Moore, who's the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. The guy should be locked in an asylum, but he's the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And presidential candidate for the GOP, Rick Santorum. Okay? They have both publicly said, and this is really what all this, you take all the radar scatter and you bring it down to a core issue. Really what it is they have both come out and publicly said that the right of privacy, well, first of all, Judge Roy Moore said the Supreme Court made that right up. It doesn't exist. Whoa.
Okay.
Whoa. Man, if the right of privacy doesn't exist, where's the rest of the rights?
Yeah, and the right of privacy has been well-founded in law over many decades.
But both of them have said that the right of privacy does not include your sexual deeds.
Where could you get more private?
Well, thank you. That's my point.
It's public. All right. So wait a minute. Does that mean that I can go out into a public street and express my sexual self? No, because I'm going to get locked up for that. So where's the ground on this, Judge Moore? I mean, ridiculous was that statement?
I can't think of anything that's, well, I can probably think of a few things, but when you look at the big grand picture, I can't think of anything that's more private than sexuality, right? We share that by choice with select people, right? Based on desires that are private. It's insane.
That's where you get somebody, in this case, this guy, Judge Roy Moore, who puts out such a ridiculous statement to try to affirm the goal that he wants to achieve.
Yeah.
Without really thinking about it.
Right.
I want to achieve this goal in this area. So because of that, I'll say that, you know, I'll make this ridiculous statement. I'm not going to think about it any deeper than that.
Yeah. And Santorum has echoed that. Cruz, Huckabee, their support for Kim Davis is based on the same principle that the right of privacy does not extend to your sexual acts. And therefore, because it doesn't extend to your sexual acts, the religious opinions of people take precedent.
Which is ridiculous.
What?
Yes. You not only do you have a freedom of religion, you have a freedom to not practice religion as well. And a lot of people tend to forget that.
Do you know there's a lot of religious people in this country, predominantly Christian, who reject that? When you say freedom of religion, they say it's not freedom to have no religion.
Yeah.
Insane people!
So it's interesting. When you're able to actually turn the table on their argument in any particular Now I can judge you. Now Bible says only God can judge you, but I'm going to judge you.
Yeah.
We're doing God's work. Like when Kim Davis said, I'm acting on under the authority of God. Thanks, Kim.
Me too.
I'm going to look for you next time I need that. So
Maybe she can share some of that with you.
This is really where it becomes from news to entertainment for me. It really does. It gets so ridiculous. It's let's just get everybody spinning in their own little direction, have them bounce off each other like, you know,
okay,
bumper cars.
Let's talk about the school transgender thing.
Okay.
One of the things I notice is that a lot of people, especially who are racist and kind of want to promote the whole idea of a race war, they'll quote from this little tiny group of knuckleheads called the New Black Panthers. You know, there's like 15 of them. I'm exaggerating. There's probably a few more. But they're this little tiny group. They're meaningless. The only reason they get any press is they adopted the name Black Panthers, right? And they dress in black and wear black berets. They're a bunch of little sissies running around saying, you know, they're bad boys. But people who want to promote the race war thing are constantly saying, oh, look how bad things are in America. Look what the New Black Panther said. It's like, why are you listening to these little punks?
Yeah.
Now, it's the same thing when I see that these transgender stories like the school. There's like, how many elementary schools are there in America? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to throw out a number and say 65,000. I don't know if that's true. Okay. Like, three schools do that. And suddenly we have a social problem. It's like,
well, you know, even that it's entering in there, you know what? Everybody out there who has no conscience, as far as I see, wants to indoctrinate children into the idea of personal relationships and sexuality, which is really more of an adult aspect.
Absolutely.
At you know, it's single digit numbers in age, which is, to me, it's criminal. It's just wrong. How about this? How about we have one massive bathroom area and every toilet has its own private door from the outside? How about that? You know, instead of having one door that you open and there's all these stalls and all these sinks, there's one room. It's got a toilet and a sink and some paper towels in it. Yeah. And there's one door to get in and out. How about that? Then we don't have to worry about public transgender
bathroom. You can't do that because they'll go in there and do drugs.
Oh, well. Yeah, that's ever stopped anybody from going into a car or any other bathroom or a closet to do drugs.
You know, it's funny because I had some woman say to me, you know, I don't need my daughter to see a man's... You know. I was like, you know what, lady? Other than my time in the military, I'm 55 years old, and in all the times I've been in a men's room, I've never seen another man swing. So what are you worried about?
Yeah, yeah. They're looking around.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, again, it's turned from news to entertainment, but we've got a couple of rants coming up.
It helps us.
It does. We'll be back.
And we're back. It's time for... What is up with killing the messenger? Now, I think we've all heard since we were children the adage, don't kill the messenger, right? Normally when somebody brings you bad news, they're like, please don't kill the messenger. And we all understand that there's no mileage to killing the messenger. I can't believe how many people do it. Interesting, in the first segment, Bill and I talked a little bit about this Kim Davis thing, and that's a good place to launch on the don't kill the messenger, or why do people kill the messenger? On DaveChampionsLiberty.com, I've been doing all sorts of topical videos. They are short, 5 minutes, 9 minutes, things like that, with an accompanying article in most cases. And I did one that was very methodical. It laid out the steps of what happened in the Kim Davis situation, starting with the very beginning, going back to the Obergefell decision and the implications and meaning and legal realities of Obergefell, and then it went on to Kim Davis and her objections and what those objections actually mean in a legal sense. It was a analytical piece. It was probably, I'm going to guess, about 7 or 8 minutes long. And I didn't in any way in that video take sides. I said this is what it is and this is why these things have happened. It was more like a legal expose, if you will. And so, upon viewing that, somebody said that they wanted nothing more to do with me and they referred to me as, what was the term they used? Homo fascist. A homo fascist. I can only guess at the meaning of that, since homo basically is the preface for anybody that's a human being, homo sapien. You saw, and of course, fascist would be like Mussolini. So, and that system, the fascist system of government. So, all I can imagine is the meaning was because the video laid things out very fast. I should point out that oftentimes when somebody wants to kill the messenger, there's never a refutation of the facts that I've laid out because they're facts. It's just name calling, such as a homo fascist. And, you know, I had to think back at this. This is, of course, there's nothing new under the sun, right? I imagine that back in my parents' era, when the fight for equal rights for black Americans was very hot, Martin Luther King, all the marches in D.C. and so forth, and I've seen this in historical exposés and in documentation, that the term that was used then to attack and smear and criticize the people who were out there working to make sure that in America blacks had the same rights as whites, the ugly term of nigger lover was used. Now, I've heard it in my lifetime, so it wasn't used just back then. But then it was used in the sense of, like, to smear somebody's reputation because what? that to promote equal rights for blacks takes something away from whites? I don't get it. Now, when we talk about whether it's the right of privacy that Bill and I talked about in the first segment, whether it's the determination that gay Americans have the right to be wed under the laws of this country, oftentimes, that's not accurate. Occasionally, very rarely, the Supreme Court reaches out to and uses as its authority the Ninth Amendment. Now, and oftentimes I hear in these various threads and social media, whatnot, this stuff about, you know, well, this judge should have not incarcerated Kim Davis because there was no law. Okay. Somehow it's so weird because Christians say they believe in freedom. Okay. But yet there's this part of the Christian community that wants to say that you're not permitted to do something unless there's a statute, which is the opposite of being free. So when the court reaches out to the Ninth Amendment to, and it's very rare, I cheer that. And here's why. My belief is that liberty is a word that we use as an umbrella term over all of our rights and the freedom to exercise those rights in a way that is not harmful to the rights of others. Now, if liberty is this umbrella term we use for all of our rights, what are all those rights? Now, if you say they're the rights that are contained in the Bill of Rights, wow, what a short list. What a ridiculously short list. What a tyrannically short list. Okay? That's it? And that you have to be given permission for everything other than that? What an ignorant frame of reference. Now, so when the court goes out to the Ninth Amendment, which it has done rarely, and says, because the Ninth Amendment speaks to our pre-existing unalienable rights, all of those that weren't mentioned in the Bill of Rights. We have, like, all of our pre-existing rights, and then we have the Bill of Rights. And then when the court goes out to the Ninth Amendment and says, we're going to acknowledge this as a right, there's a certain kind of person that screams bloody. Now, me, I'm like, yay, hey, the more rights that we can pull out of the Ninth Amendment and take cognizance of them, they're already there. They already exist. What we're doing is taking, in this case, judicial cognizance of them. I'm like, yes, more rights, more freedom. Every right you want to pull out of the Ninth Amendment and make it cognizable to the courts or cognizable through the courts, right on, more rights enumerated, right? Now, enumerated rights should never take away from the unenumerated ones, but I like the fact that on the record, so to speak, we're pulling them out of the Ninth and talking about them and enumerating them. So when that happens, and the court does that, and somebody turns around and says, that's wrong, that's bad, that's not a right, because this book, do I have this right? There we go. No, it just doesn't say.
I should have chosen one that had
the big gold letters on it.
Show them the spine.
You know, there we go. Most people, I think, would be shocked to know that, short of maybe a pastor, I probably own more of these than 99.9% of the people that are watching the show because of my past affiliation and my penchant for research. But for somebody to claim that you can't pull that out of the Ninth Amendment, you can't declare that a right, because this, the lion's share of this being stuff said by nomadic herdsmen 3,000 years ago who didn't know where the sun went at night, and so we're going to say in 2015 that you can or cannot have rights based on this? Jeez Louise, what are people thinking? And it makes me wonder, do Christians, I'm talking about a Christian extremist, there are plenty of wonderful Christians who don't play this, right? Who, they follow their religion in their home and they do their best in their life to follow it and to be good people, but they don't expect everybody else to live like they demand because they're not making any demands. I'm talking about what I call the hard right Christian extremists. And they often will say how much they love America. And I question whether that's true. I question whether what is true is that they love this and that they love America only to the extent that America does what they say this requires. Bill, what do you think about all that?
I want to concentrate on the Ninth Amendment part of this, because when people like to tout, you know, it's not in the Constitution. You know, the vast majority of them have never read the Constitution.
Ain't
or
that
at
the
least
truth?
Not since they left school. Now, keep in mind, the Constitution...
And they apparently don't know about the Supremacy Clause either.
No.
Yeah.
The Constitution is 4 pages long.
Yeah.
Add in the Bill of Rights, it makes 5. Add in the other existing amendments, and it's 2 more.
Mm-hmm.
You got a grand total of 7 pages of information there. Most people spend more time reading Facebook and other social media in a day than they do reading the Constitution. I forget what president it was, but there was one of our presidents in the 20th century that allegedly read the Constitution cover to cover every night at bedtime before going to bed and turning out the light. That's not asking too much. You think, wow, that's a lot. No, it's 7 pages.
I know.
And at that time, there was a couple less amendments, so maybe 6.5. The Ninth Amendment is so key, and it's one of those ones that gets overlooked, like the Third Amendment, right? Third Amendment, you can't house soldiers
without
pay. Yeah. But the Ninth Amendment is so key because it literally spells out that, understand, there's a whole lot more rights than enumerated rights. And occasionally, those things are going to come up.
Yeah.
This is one of them.
And this, what I'm about to say, plays into some of the other things we've talked about on the show. Government officials all take what?
An oath.
An oath, which they swear allegiance to their state constitution and?
The federal constitution.
Correct. And for the most part, the state and federal constitutions are in lockstep. There's very rarely something in a state constitution that's repugnant to the federal constitution. And when there is, it has to fail.
I like the word repugnant.
Repugnant, yes.
I'm gonna make a definition.
I'm gonna put that in your personal bill cards.
I am.
And now you got me off my beam here. Okay,
you're talking about when state constitutions and the federal constitution, and rarely are they at odds.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. So government officials take the oath. That was the theme, right? And I like to ask government officials, and I, admittedly, I tend to do this more with police officers than I do with a guy who's a desk jockey, right? Can you tell me what Article 1 is? Right. No. How about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17? Of critical importance, right? No. Article 2? No. Article 3? No. Article 4? No. They have no idea what's in the Constitution, even though they took an oath. And this baffles me. And it seems to me, taking back to the Kim Davis thing that I started this with, you know, kill the messenger when you explain what the law is, as opposed to what Christian extremists want it to be or claim that it is or cry that it's not or whatever their deal is.
And I got to tell you, the interesting thing about you is you are all against the Christian extremism.
Yeah.
However, you know both sides of the coin because you have been heavily involved in Christianity in the
True.
Past.
True.
And so it's almost like you were born again and then you had a rebirth from there. So if you want to talk about somebody that's got a really excellent background in Christianity and can argue both sides, you're one of those rare people.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. And I always often describe it as, you know, at one time I was a Christian, then I came out into the light. And, you know, but it's like Kim Davis, she took an oath. County clerks have to take an oath, yes?
Yes, they do.
To the U.S. Constitution. And yet, it seems like she said, this is what I took the oath to. And screw the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah,
and it's just so weird.
It's interesting that the Constitution has now changed due to this decision while she's been in office. But you got it. So she took it before gay marriage. Now it's there. It's protected. The thing is, though, it's still the Constitution.
Right.
And it still came under the Ninth Amendment.
That's right.
Get with it.
And we'll be back right after these words.
Welcome back. Now it's time for my rant. You know what still really grinds my gears? The ever-increasing amount of ignorant and oftentimes stupid people that say ignorant and oftentimes stupid things. You know, there are agendas out there in the world, and anybody that is on the national stage has one. And there's an anti-gun agenda. It's been out there forever. There's always people that are afraid of what they don't know. And literally, holding a device in your hands that launches a projectile through some form of explosion, which is within a foot or so of your face, is an unnatural act. Sometimes, if you're shooting a rifle, it's right up near your face. That little explosion back here that launches the bullet down there. And a lot of people are afraid of that. So they never learn about it. They just think that it's got to be a bad thing. They get their information from Hollywood, from television, from newspapers, from now social media, which there are zero controls over. Good thing. You shouldn't have controls on them. But what you should have is the ability to go to school and learn not what to think, but learn how to think. And we've lost that ability in this country for the most part. People just don't have the ability to think. They don't have the ability to actually take something apart intellectually and from there figure out where there's actually some substance and pitch the garbage out of it. You know, being somebody who's part of the firearms culture, if you will, I see things that are within the industry that are anti-gun by nature that are still being professed by the actual gun community, the pro-gun community. They've taken anti-gun verbiage and terminology and continued it through their own terminology, accepting it without thinking. I'll give you a perfect example. Assault weapon. Now, an assault weapon actually has a real-life definition in the Department of Defense booklet. I shouldn't say it a booklet. It's actually a volume. And in there, it's a select-fire, semi-to-fully automatic gun. Shoulder-fired. That's an assault weapon. When you talk about things like AR-15s, AK-47s, SKSs, those are semi-automatic versions of the military counterpart. They're not assault rifles. In fact, they're sport utility rifles. I've actually gone hunting successfully with an AR-15 before. I know folks who go out with .308 caliber versions of these detachable magazine-fed semi-automatic rifles, which are specifically designed for battlefield operations and military use, and used for all kinds of sporting-related uses, hunting-related uses, and defense-related uses in the civilian market. So, is it actually an assault weapon? No. If anything, it's a counter-assault weapon. I prefer sport utility rifle, and I would encourage others in the industry and in common everyday society to use those things. You have to disarm it. I used to work for a very, very large firearms training organization, and they had all of these various containers which were secured in a secured area, alarms, guards, blah, 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 an area that they called assault weapon storage. Still today, they call it that. And that was the idea if you lived in California or in Washington, D.C. or New York, where you couldn't have these sport utility rifles because they called them assault weapons. You could actually store them on the property at this firearms training center. And they would hold on to them for you. You could come out, check them out whenever you wanted, whatever. We'll hold on to them for you. So the area that you live in, you won't be violating their particular law. They call it assault weapon storage. It doesn't do anybody any favors. Weapon storage is fine. Another one is high capacity magazine, or high cap magazines for short. That drives me nuts. Very, very few high capacity magazines exist. They're standard capacity magazines. The ones that hold fewer rounds that fit in the same gun are legislatively mandated reduced capacity magazines. I'd like to thank my partner in crime over here, Dave Champion, for providing that definition to me years ago. But you have to realize a Glock 17 that holds a 17-round magazine in it is supposed to hold 17 rounds. So a 17-round magazine for that is not a high-capacity magazine. It is a standard-capacity magazine. One that only holds 10 rounds, that only exists due to legislation, legislatively mandated reduced-capacity magazines. There is, however, an actual high-capacity magazine for that gun. It's actually designed for the Glock 18, which is a fully automatic version of the Model 17. And it holds 33 rounds. And it extends well below the bottom of the frame. It's literally a high-capacity magazine, one of the few in existence. So when it comes to those sorts of terminology, you need to get your act together. Those in the industry need to stop this nonsense. Another thing that's out there that absolutely grinds my gears. When people say the gun just went off. Well, when a gun just goes off, here is one absolute truth. It just goes off while it's in somebody's hand. Have you ever heard of a gun just going off when it was inside somebody's nightstand or in their safe or safely holstered with nobody touching it? No, it's never happened. In every case you'll ever hear where somebody claims it just went off, it was in somebody's physical possession in their hand. And in order to make it go off, what do you need? You need to have a finger that goes onto a trigger and presses. Now, there are a few cases out there where guns have been dropped, they've fallen, whatever's happened, and it's gone off when it's impacted whatever it falls on, the ground, the concrete, a table, whatever it might be. Very, very, very rare. And most guns, that'll never happen to. It's usually a gun that is somehow defective because it's a piece of crap from the manufacturer, or it's been modified by the owner, a previous owner, or a gunsmith to where it is at an unsafe level. But you have to realize, when guns are built and then sold in the United States or built outside of the U.S. and come in, they have to meet certain criteria in law, regulated by Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, on those guys, but regulated by the laws and the regulations that they are there to uphold. And they've got to be safe. You will almost never see a standard factory gun that's going to get dropped and go bang. It's really not what we're talking about. There's actually some liability involved in that. When someone's got a gun in their hand and they say it just went off and so-and-so got shot, or it went through the ceiling, or it plowed through the car door, whatever it is, it was in somebody's hand. And the way it just went off was the finger went on the trigger and somebody pressed it. Dave, how do you feel about this nonsensical way that people handle all things gun, even when they're sometimes pro-gun?
Guns don't just go off.
I might just go off,
but guns don't just go off.
Okay. Guns don't kill people. Bullets kill
people. That's right. Yeah. And I got to take you to the woodshed on something.
Okay.
Okay. A 33-round magazine for a Glock 18 is not a high-cap magazine. It's a standard magazine for a Glock 18.
It is, but if you put it into a 17, it's a high-capacity magazine.
No, but you're right, Bill, and I've been saying this for years, that, and it's ironic because the firearms industry, as you point out, has adopted these terms because they sell product, okay? If they said in their ad, come get a standard-capacity magazine, okay, for, we'll use the name Glock again, that wouldn't be as sexy an
right.
ad as come purchase your high capacity magazines from us at our sale price. The same thing with the term, I'll use assault rifle when I'm talking to somebody like you as a shorthand, okay, because we know what we're talking about, okay, but when talking to the public or when talking to knuckleheads, I will always say a semi-automatic magazine-fed rifle.
Now, you and I actually speak not so much in the term. We generally speak about the actual gun. Like you'll say, you know, my AK or my AR or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know the guns, you know, whatever it might be, my BAR. Okay, so we know this.
So when I want to reference these things that politicians and anti-gunners and sadly pro-gunners call assault rifles, if I'm speaking publicly, I never use that term. I will say a semi-automatic magazine-fed rifle. Okay, that's right. And then if somebody says, "Well, wait a second, my old Woodstock rifle, you know, that my grandfather handed down to me, that takes a magazine, that's not an assault rifle. I didn't say assault rifle, right? And your rifle, that's beautiful and wood that you got from your grandfather, is, as far as operating system and what it can achieve and not achieve, it is absolutely identical to the AR that you can go down to the store and buy today."
Yeah, and this is something I've actually hit on. And the state of California, they're the biggest anti-gun state in the union. And in the state of California, they have laws against profiling of all kinds of things. Yet, they profile guns based on their look.
Yes.
So, we have a gun, say an AR-15 or an AK-47 that is a semi-automatic detachable magazine-fed rifle.
There you go.
That operates the same as, say, a pre-1964 Winchester Model 100, which is a semi-automatic 308 magazine-fed rifle.
There you go.
I used to own one. So they operate the same, yet one is banned and one is not. The M1A.
Only politicians can
do this. The M1A, the M1 Garand, those things, the M1A is a magazine-fed semi-automatic rifle. And all their newer variants, you've got the SOCOM and you've got the Scout and the SOCOM 2, those are all cool.
They are.
Because they don't have the same look as an AK or an AR. You have to have a thumb hole stock. You can't have a flash hider. Like those things really, a bayonet lug. Have you ever seen anybody in modern day with, I mean, you and I have seen thousands upon tens of thousands of different ARs. You ever seen one that a sporter uses that has a bayonet mounted on it?
Never.
No, and that lug is just an argument.
And
arguing
let point. Me be clear, I've never seen a bayonet on a rifle since I left the military. Ever. By the way, Bill and I did a comparison.
Yes, we did.
On a standard, on a firearm that has a standard 7 or 8 capacity magazine, depending on where you get your magazine.
1911 versus the Glock.
Right.
What it was.
Right. So standard capacity for 1911 and standard capacity for a Glock. And Bill and I did a comparison, because these crazy politicians say, you know, you need a lower magazine because they'd have to change the magazine to save lives. And
right.
Bill and I did a comparison. You can find it on YouTube. And it begins with the idiocy of legislatively reduced.
Right.
The idiocy of legislatively reduced.
So search Bill Dave idiocy. And you'll probably find it on YouTube.
And it shows you that having magazines with lower capacity, the idea that then the guy has to change magazines to keep killing, and that's going to save lives. It shows definitively. We prove that line of reason, not illogic, is BS.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? In the city of Los Angeles, the city council and mayor passed and signed legislation that's gone into effect. It'll actually take hold, I think, November 1st, that you cannot have any magazines over 10 rounds in the city, and there will be nothing grandfathered in. That takes effect coming up
that
in the next month.
That will probably fail constitutionally.
Oh, I would imagine it would.
Yeah, because that's considered a taking.
It is.
Yeah. And we'll be back.
Put down your phone, Dave. We're back, segment 4, and this is where we talk about things that you send to us via email, provided we want to talk about them too. And we are just looking at that. We had an extended break. The email address is right here. It is daveandbillshow@gmail.com. Send us topics that you want us to talk about. We're going to hit a couple of those today, and of course, we're going to caveat upon that with a couple other things we have chatted about many times. And also you can check out all of our videos that we've done, all of our shows. There's audio available as well at totallyunprepared.info. Go there, share it. Send it off to folks. Although we're based in Southern Nevada, anybody who has internet can go on there. I think that you could have a mountain cabin completely off the grid in, you know, northern Zimbabwe. As long as you've got Wi-Fi, you can pick up Totally Unprepared.
Also on the Facebook page for Totally Unprepared, I've taken a few other little things up there from time to time, so it's not just Totally Unprepared.
Yeah.
You know, trying to keep on beam with what we talk about.
Sure.
I wouldn't make a hard left, but if something's relevant, I throw it up there. One of the things we want to talk about is, we've talked about this before, the government conducting surveillance on citizens without warrants.
Okay. Yes.
And
commonplace.
Yes. Well, fortunately, about this much less commonplace this now, as of last week, the Federal Bureau of Investigation came out, which, of course, most people don't understand. It is a bureau, right? That's what the B stands for. Mm-hmm. It is a bureau within the Department of Justice. So
correct.
This is a... published by the FBI, but it's a DOJ policy for FBI. And there's a device called a Stingray. And law enforcement has been using this for several years now.
Not the bicycle.
Not the bicycle and not the fish. I don't know if that's a fish.
Right.
Not the aquatic
fish.
Creature.
Yes.
How's that? And what they do is they're looking to gather cell phone data from a target. Unfortunately, the Stingray, it spoofs being a cell site. So it doesn't just gather the target data.
It gathers macro data.
Every cell phone user who is in that, within the reach of the Stingray, all their data gets sucked up.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's one. Now, the busiest section of interstate in the entire country is Interstate 15 between Southern California and Las Vegas.
Interesting.
Yes, busiest interstate in the entire country. Along Interstate 15, at the very southern end of the Las Vegas Strip, you'll find the South Point Hotel and Casino.
Right.
There's one that's operated out of there. I don't even know if South Point is aware of it being on their property, but it is a Stingray that is right there.
Interesting.
Gathering up everything that's within its signal.
So there's never been any policy for the use of these, although the ACLU and other civil libertarians have been screaming bloody murder, and I agree that the government needs a warrant to use these things, whether they're going after the target, whether they're sucking up other people's data, I don't care. If you're going out into the public and you're consuming our data, you need a warrant. So the FBI released a new set of guidelines, a policy statement, that says that the FBI, and they wrote, well, they wrote the policy and also roped in some other agencies, I think the U.S. Marshals Service and a third one.
Like Fish and Game or somebody that wouldn't otherwise use it.
Yes, somewhat irrelevant, yeah. And it says that when they're going to use the Stingray now, they have to go out and get a warrant. There's some small exceptions, it's particular kind of matters. But generally speaking, the lion's share, 98% of the time that they would use it, they have to go get a warrant now. Interestingly, though, if they don't go get a warrant, it's not a violation of law because the Supreme Court has never adjudicated this yet.
Okay.
It would only merely be a policy.
Violation of policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they can choose what to do with that if they even find out.
Right. And of course, policy is enforced at the whim of the administration.
Yes.
So if the upper echelons of the FBI or upper echelons of DOJ say, you know what, we consider this matter serious enough, you go ahead and break the policies. We're not going to do anything to you.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a step in the right direction. I think one of the ACLU directors came out and said step in the right direction, but nowhere near enough. I agree. Sadly, it also does not embrace, like, DHS dwarfs FBI. And it doesn't embrace them because DHS has its own chain of command. It's not in within DOJ.
It's a completely different cabinet level position.
Correct.
FBI is under DOJ. DHS is completely separate.
Correct. And DOJ is under the Attorney General.
Right.
Yeah. So you're right. So step in the right direction, but far from reining in what I consider to be the police state.
And this is where an executive order itself is actually legal and prudent, where the chief executive, the president of the United States, should write an executive order that says this has not yet been addressed in law. However, in the spirit of the law, in the spirit of the Fourth Amendment, in the spirit of liberty.
And the fact that I'm all your bosses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you will get this, or you'll be violating law. My administrative.
You'll be violating my executive order, yes.
Yeah.
So, an executive order can also contain punishment for violating the executive order.
Yes, it can.
The only thing that's prohibited in an executive order is that it cannot be in conflict with any existing laws, go outside the boundaries, like push the boundaries of a law, or step outside the boundaries of the Constitution.
Yeah, and I don't believe it can actually provide a criminal penalty either.
Correct. Administrative penalty, but not criminal.
Yeah, I think the worst it could do is you're fired.
And the administrative penalty is within the government, not outside the government. But my point is, the executive order, you are correct. it could constrain government employees. It simply can't enlarge, be outside the law.
Yeah, and it's interesting that being a policy, the administration can do whatever they want with it, again, choose to ignore it. When I was on Las Vegas Metro as a police officer back in the mid-90s, there was a policy in effect that you could not accept anything free or half-price lunch or anything.
I'm going to have to arrest you.
Thanks, McGill. But you couldn't accept free lunch or like discounted lunch or discounted or free stuff at a 7-Eleven or other place. You couldn't accept anything discounted or free. It was the only policy in the entire manual
that nobody followed.
That was commonly overlooked. As a matter of fact, when we were in briefing, the sergeant would call out names, and you would say what time you wanted to go to eat and where you'd want to go to eat, because the unwritten policy was you didn't want to burn a place that gave free or discounted meals more than once in a shift.
Right. And it's funny because we used to do the same thing, of course. And I spent virtually my whole time on the job down in the hood. I worked deep in the hood, down in the barrio, MS-13, the various gangs. And so businesses were very, very happy to have us in there. Mm-hmm. So again, it was one of those things. I was happy to have the officers receive a discount or complimentary food. However, like your sergeant, I'd be like, okay, you're not going there twice a day.
Okay? Right.
First of all, you're only entitled to one lunch break. But if things are slow and you get two, you're not going to the same place twice.
Well, you didn't want two different groups going there either. And we weren't allowed to eat more than, it used to be four deep. Then it got to three deep. And they reduced that because two different training officers that had their two trainees at the end of field training all went to the Tropicana that used to give free meals. And they went in there and they ate everything. Yeah. They had lobster and steak and this and that and the other. And the price of the meal came to over $100. And somebody left a $5 tip. So it went up the chain, and you ended up with a food and beverage manager calling and talking to the captain at the area command, and became a big deal. As it turns out, a few months later, I ended up on that same squad with those same jackasses that did that. They still showed no remorse. Hey, whatever. You know, if you're going to get something for free, you tip heavy. I wasn't a big fan of all the free garbage. There was a 7-Eleven we could go to that you could get anything you wanted. And I knew guys that would go in there before shift. They would all but go grocery shopping.
Yeah, their arms would
be literally. Yeah. And I'm like, if I went in there and I grabbed a big gulp, I would still leave a buck. Oh, we can't take that. Then keep it as a tip.
Yeah. You know, my rule for my guys was, you're ordering ordinary things off the menu. Don't let me find that you ordered the prime rib. Okay? That's taking advantage. Mm-hmm. And you're not getting dessert. If you want dessert, you pay for that out of your own pocket. Mm-hmm. Minimum tip. Do not let me hear back from a proprietor that you tip less than 20%.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Of the full retail value of the meal. And again, that was because, okay, you're getting something to which you're really not, you don't deserve it in any sort of way. This is somebody being kind to you, somebody being nice to you. And I certainly understand there's a quid pro quo. They loved having guys in uniforms with guns sitting in their business in those neighborhoods. But nevertheless, it's a spiff. Don't abuse.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And
speaking of don't abuse, we are talking about the government and the whole stingray thing. We seem to see this massive abuse, and we only got about 2-3 minutes left in this, so we'll have to be quick at it. But where the government has decided through their own laws that they have passed. Now, I don't believe the consent of the governed was given in this. Passed the laws that they can lie, cheat, steal all they want to the general public, the bosses, if you will. The employees, the servants, can lie to us all they want to try to snare us and trap us, get something going on their own investigation. But we had better be completely honest with them. And sometimes withholding information is illegal to them.
Yeah, withholding information or giving them false information.
Right.
One of the things, I think it is at worst corrupt and at best inappropriate in a free country to criminalize lying, okay? Humans lie, and sadly, all the time. And, as I used to say on the Erstwhile Dave Champion show, the government lies all the time and lies even when the truth would serve it well. And I forget which Chief Justice it was who said that, and I'm not sure I necessarily agree with this, but he said the government is the great teacher. Okay.
Oh, my back door it is. History is the great teacher.
I think it was Learned Hand who said that. And I think there's arguments to be made on both sides. I think a lot of people do learn from government.
How not to operate.
Well, I think people do learn in the positive sense that he was indicating. I just think they shouldn't. I think it's a human nature thing. They look at the authority. They learn from Caesar. Okay, oh, well, Caesar did it.
Okay, well, you also have to remember, there's authority, but where do you get that authority? Because the power resides in the governed. That's us.
Dude, you're thinking.
I know.
Stop that.
Imagine that, because I wasn't taught this. I was taught how to think. Right. I actually went through school when they taught you how to think, not taught you what to think.
And, you know, the funny thing is, I was raised in a very lockstep home. And I was actually taught, I rebelled the whole time, but they tried to shove down my throat in lockstep, in lockstep, in lockstep, in lockstep. Never think, do what you're told. If that person's in authority, do what you're told. Never question, never think.
I'm lucky that that was not my home.
It didn't seem to take with me.
Because the authority figure is also a human being, or a group of human beings, who are also flawed and oftentimes have their own agenda and will also abuse things such as truth. I remember once I counter Miranda. If you get Mirandized by the cops, okay, I'll speak. However, here's a counter Miranda and you need to sign it.
I'm going to counter Mirandize you.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think we're out of time.
That's pretty much the end of the show. We'll see you next week.
Take care.